Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Joining us for Medical Monday today is Dr. John Leibovitz. Dr. John Leibovitz is chief of neurointerventional surgery at Vassar Brothers Medical Center and a neurosurgeon at New Vance Health. Fellowship trained, Dr. Leibovitz specializes in cerebrovascular neurosurgery. He has a particular focus on minimally invasive techniques and radial neurointerventions for both diagnostic procedures as well as the treatment of stroke and brain aneurysms. He also focuses on the treatment of degenerative spine and traumatic injuries to the brain and spine and focuses on conservative care and minimally invasive treatments prior to discussing surgical options. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Again, the phone number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. John Leibovitz, welcome to Medical Monday. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What was it like having me read all about you right in front of you on the radio just now? Was it correct?
It was all correct.
Great.
And it sounds like I'm pretty impressive.
Yeah. It does. It does indeed. It's it is genuinely a thing that is called the smartest thing you can do, right? We usually say it's not brain surgery, but for you it is.
Right. For me, it actually is. The jokes are the real, you know. It is brain surgery today, yeah.
It is. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. How did you find your way to this specialty?
Prior to starting medical school in Chicago, I actually worked on a research study for stroke patients. And that was my first time actually seeing brain and neurology. And I just found it so fascinating how the brain can retrain itself. And there's procedures and surgeries that can be done. And during medical school, I went through the normal rotations and kept finding myself coming back to really wanting to do neurosurgery. And here we are.
And here we are. And how do you find yourself at the organizations you work for currently? How did you find your way to New York, and why are you, in our listening area and able to come here today?
Perfect. So I'm a Midwesterner. I grew up in Chicago.
Yep.
And I did college here in New York at Colgate.
Got it.
And went back to the Midwest for medical school in St. Louis, where I met my wife, who's from Boston, and we kind of split the difference here in the tri-state kind of area, New York, Connecticut area.
And tell me about some of the particular things that you, try to keep up on in your practice. I read some of the techniques, et cetera, and tell us, I guess, sort of give us a primer on minimally invasive neurointerventions.
So
primer, a brief summary of that.
The brief summary, things like brain aneurysms are, pretty scary diagnoses, and the traditional treatment involved a big open brain surgery where you incision behind the hairline, removing some of the skull and going to where the brain aneurysm is and clipping it or removing it. And maybe 20 years ago became more common to start going through the blood vessels of the leg, similar to how, heart procedures started moving towards through the blood vessels with stents and things like that. Neurosurgeons were a little bit behind that curve. The cardiologists are at the front of the curve. And over the past even 10 to 15 years, we moved into having better equipment, better techniques, better devices where most aneurysms can be treated in a minimally invasive way. And over the past 5 years, we started being able to go through the radial artery through the arm, making those treatments even more minimally invasive.
What advances in technology have gotten us here?
So the combination of the catheters or that's the equipment that we use. Catheters are kind of like a long tube that lets us deliver our equipment. And when you're coming from the arm, for example, down to the heart, it's relatively a straight shot up your arm and down into the chest. But to go to the brain, you need to make a U-turn once it gets into the chest. And some of those twists and turns took some time for the engineers of the companies that make these devices to get the catheters and wires to be stable to make those turns and then allow us to deliver the equipment to the brain.
It's so complicated, sir. Yeah. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. John Leibovitz is here to take your questions about brain health and the treatment of stroke and brain aneurysms. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us voxpop@wamc.org. How do you practice using the catheters to deliver your equipment?
So the companies have kind of what they're called a flow model, which is basically, a simulator where, you have the real catheter, but it's not in a real patient, obviously, and it's all simulated to have some idea of what it feels like to move them around.
Mm-hmm.
back in training, we did more of that. There really aren't like cadaver labs. That's pretty rare to, you know, like in to do that. So really it's a little bit of the flow model and then just practicing when you're doing your surgery to be, the more surgeries you do, the better accustomed you are to, you know, own the craft.
How often are you performing surgery? On average. It's not exact.
There's usually somewhere around 3 days a week I'm doing some type of procedure, sometimes more. The emergencies like strokes can happen at any time, so those aren't scheduled, obviously. Could be 2 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, weekends, holidays. And some of the more elective procedures, diagnostic procedures, you know, during the week, you know, during the daytime.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. John Leibovitz is our guest this afternoon on Vox Pop. It is Medical Monday, and he is the chief of neurointerventional surgery at Vassar Brothers Medical Center and a neurosurgeon at New Vance Health. Once again, the phone number, 800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Are you often communicating with patients who aren't able to communicate for themselves? Are you, or is that's the question. I'll end there. Question mark.
So it's a good question. So it really depends, you know, on some of the more acute things, the urgent things, God forbid, have a ruptured brain aneurysm or a stroke. You very well might not be able to communicate yourself. Or even if you can, it sometimes is unclear if you're really fully able to understand. So in those situations, you know, we really rely heavily on family members. And on the more diagnostic, elective, non-ruptured brain aneurysms, then obviously it's a discussion like you and I are having right now.
Right.
So I would say maybe a third of my practice is kind of the torter is this urgent, emergent stuff, and the rest of it is kind of more scheduled.
And how are people discovering that they have an unerupted aneurysm so that you can have these discussions and do these interventions?
You know, the most common is people are having headaches. And you know,
oh, no. Go ahead.
And you know, you have an MRI from your primary doctor or see your neurologist who gets a CAT scan or MRI where you find these unruptured brain aneurysms, or you have a family history that kind of leads to screening. But you know, our imaging is getting so good, and we're screening more people for some of these, you know, mild complaints, that we're finding a lot more of these aneurysms before they bleed, which is great, so that you can get them treated before, you know, the chance of having a major stroke or death or something like that happens.
1-800-348-2551. Your bio also mentioned treatment of degenerative spine disorders. Could you tell me more about what that might entail?
Yeah, so, you know, the majority of neurosurgery actually is spinal surgery. And so lumbar disc disease, like lumbar fusions, or same thing in the cervical or the neck region. You know, again, God forbid, trauma with, you know, a broken bone, things like that. Some of that time we have to put the pieces back together. So, you know, if you have back and leg pain, you know, a lot of times you'll see your primary, maybe get some medications, do some physical therapy, which may lead, if it doesn't get better, to an MRI or an injection from a pain doctor. And if you're still having symptoms and there's a, you know, a lumbar disc that's out of place or something like that, then you might be a candidate for surgery to remove that disc to take the pressure off the nerve to hopefully improve your leg pain.
I'm going to ask a question that I'm aware the phrasing is childish, but it's where I'm going to start. Is brain surgery harder than spine surgery? Is one of them harder than the other? More difficult for you, the surgeon, or more complicated for a surgeon? He's thinking.
You know, they're different.
Okay.
You know, so spine surgery, a lot of it involves they're similar in what you're trying to do. Is you have something like a brain tumor that's pressing on a part of the brain, or you have a disc out of place that's pressing on a nerve, and the goal is to remove that pressure from either the brain or the spine nerves, right? And so you have to do that by removing bone or ligament or a combination of that in the spine. Obviously, in the brain, you have to remove some bone to get access to that. So I think they're a little bit different. You know, your brain, you have to be a little more delicate. You know, spine is a lot of, to be honest, like some orthopedic work to get there, right? You have to remove the bone and ligament to get to where the nerves are. And sometimes that can be, you know, a lot of drilling, you know, a little different than, you know, the fine work you have to do inside the brain.
I want to thank you sincerely for taking that question so seriously and answering it that way. Follow up, should we still be saying it's not like it's brain surgery, or should we say it's not like it's spine surgery, which, or...
I like the brain surgery way
okay.
better.
Yeah, okay, yeah, got yeah. it. The classic. We'll keep it.
Keep it classic, yeah.
Okay.
Classic and classy, yeah.
1-800-348-2551. It is time for our first underwriting break, and we will return with your calls momentarily.
Support for WAMC comes from the Borough Gift Shop, Dalton Ave, Pittsfield, Mass., featuring plants, crystals, home and garden decor, minerals for collectors, and more. Open daily from 11 to 7, social media at Explore the Borough. Hudson Dental Arts, providing all Encore implants, a new technology that strives to restore smiles in a single-day procedure, hudsondentist.com. New Perspectives Albany, providing counseling for individuals 18 years and older for life's transitions, grief, trauma, anxiety, depression, and stress, in-office and teletherapy, newperspectivescounselingpractice.com for info. Passano Paints, Albany, New York, proud corporate partner to New York State Industries for the Disabled, helping create employment opportunities for individuals with disabilities and qualified veterans. PassanoPaints.com for details. And Dr. Jian Shen, specializing in endoscopic spine surgery and disc regeneration, treating disc herniations, spinal stenosis, and myelopathy. ENVisionSpineSurgery.com for details.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. This is Medical Monday. I'm Sarah LaDuc in for Ray Graff. He will return tomorrow. The phone number, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Our email address, voxpop@wamc.org. The doctor in studio with me, Dr. John Leibovitz, who is chief of neurointerventional surgery at Vassar Brothers Medical Center and a neurosurgeon at New Vance Health. Once again, the phone number, 800-348-2551. Are you ready, Dr. Leibovitz, to go to the phones?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. Jay, you are on the phone. Hello. You are on the show, even.
Welcome.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. 5 months ago, my son was diagnosed with leukemia. One of the drugs that was included in his chemotherapy has created some neurotoxicity, which is paralyzed him from the waist down. Can you talk to me a little bit about how this can be resolved?
You know, Jay, I'm sorry to hear that, and I understand what a tough situation this whole thing must be with the diagnosis and now the symptoms after the medication, and, you know, I'm really sorry. Unfortunately, you know, I don't know enough about that to give you a good answer. You know, a lot of these chemotherapy drugs do have neurotoxicity and cause usually neuropathy and different things like that. Most of the time, the symptoms are mild, not always. But with paralysis, that sounds like, you know, something different than what is, you know, the kind of the standard that I don't know much about in terms of the exact medications that were given and things like that. So I wish I had a better answer for you, but unfortunately, I don't.
Thank you for calling in, Jay. Sorry we couldn't be more assistance in this instance. I didn't mean for that to rhyme.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon if you can. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or voxpop@wamc.org. And let us go now to Elizabeth in New Paltz. Hello, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon.
Hi. I got a question. I didn't realize that, because I didn't come in at the beginning, that you're at Vassar. If somebody's in New Paltz, then they would be brought to Vassar. But let's say they were in Kingston and they had symptoms of a stroke and they know they're having a stroke. How do they make sure that the patient, whether it's themselves or a loved one, and let's say they're in Kingston area, that they're brought to you and not to the local hospital because you have very special skills that wouldn't be available in the local hospital? How do you make sure that the person can get to you so you can pull out the clot instead of just being left to let the stroke progress? That's one question. Then I have another question that's totally separate, because I understand that that the type of surgery that you do is also the similar to to putting a stent in when somebody has venous sinus stenosis in the brain.
Okay, yes.
That's my two questions.
Okay. Well, we could start with your second one, maybe. So tell me more about, venous sinus stenting. What exactly is your question? Like, who would qualify, or how is it similar to other procedures or surgeries? Where are you looking for us to go?
If somebody is diagnosed with that and they have pulsatile tinnitus and they've had imaging done and they found that they have it, when do they decide that they should do it? Do you do it? There's a Dr. Patsalides who used to do it in Manhattan, and now he's at North Shore. And when does somebody decide that this is an appropriate procedure to do?
Sure. So, there's a lot of nuances to this. And, a lot of time with pulsatile tinnitus, there's no cause. Sometimes there is a cause, which could be a blood vessel issue in the brain. A lot of times it's not from stenosis of a sinus or a big vein. A sinus in the brain is called a big veins of the brain are called sinuses.
Okay.
So if you have stenosis or narrowing, generally the symptom of that is not routinely pulsatile tinnitus. Yeah, I would say more commonly people with pulsatile tinnitus would have something called a dural fistula, which is an abnormal connection between arteries and veins. So it really depends on what the imaging looks like at the time.
What about empty cella? Is that a symptom?
So usually empty cella could be more of a symptom of people with headaches and some other causes. But I wouldn't say routinely empty cella and pulsatile tinnitus go together. But this is definitely something that we do in Poughkeepsie at Vassar Brothers. And we have a whole neurosurgery and neurology team for, the things that are surgical and neurointervention that I'll do myself. There's three other open neurosurgeons that do spine and brain conditions, as well as, medical neurologists. So, this would be something potentially better evaluated in the office. And your second question, okay. Your first question about, where to go, usually with, EMS, when you call 911, they usually take you to the closest stroke center. And from there, you get an evaluation to make sure it is a stroke or not. If you're a TPA candidate or the blood clotting medication or not, they would do that. And based on the imaging, if they do find what's called a large vessel occlusion or medium vessel occlusion, being the big or medium vessels in the brain that we can see a blood clot to remove, they would transfer you to, the closest center for that procedure to happen.
Okay, that's an important answer. In other words, if you go to a local hospital and they find that you're having a stroke, they'll transfer you to a hospital where they can treat you. Is that correct?
That is correct. And, just the caveat to that is sometimes based on the times of the presentation, how long it takes to diagnose and transfer, sometimes the treatments change by the time you get to the other hospital. But routinely, you would not stay at the first hospital if they thought there was something that could be done at a larger hospital. But obviously, every situation is, on a case-by-case basis.
Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you,
okay,
Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. 1-800-348-2551. The phone number to pose your query to Dr. John Leibovitz is 800-348-2551. Let us go to, yes, this one. Julie in Fort Edward. Hello, Julie.
Hi.
Hey, good afternoon.
I have a question. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. So my mom was diagnosed with an aneurysm years ago, and it was discovered because she had a tremor in her hands. Her hands were shaking. I mean, I don't know if it, in the end, that really had anything to do with it, but that was what got them looking, and took care of it, and she's fine. And now, 35 years later, my hands are starting to tremor, and I'm just curious if you think that could have had anything to do with her aneurysm, or if that's not really a symptom.
You know, so in general, you know, tremor is not considered one of the, you know, common symptoms of a brain aneurysm. You know, the most common symptom is really headaches or some other vague neurologic symptoms at times before they were to bleed. So, but your mom and kind of what you're saying is now with the advances of our non-invasive imaging like MRI and CAT scan, you know, you would be able to see your primary doctor or neurologist and say, I'm having a neurologic symptom, tremor. My mom had a brain aneurysm, and likely your doctor would order you some type of blood vessel imaging, CTA, MRA, and whatever other workup they think is indicated based on, you know, your exam and the total presentation to see if you were to have a brain aneurysm. But I do agree with you that in general, tremor is not a common symptom, but any neurologic symptom kind of in today's world could get you imaging, which may find a brain aneurysm, which may or may not require treatment based, again, on all of the factors to come. But, you know, family history in your case of a brain aneurysm and a neurologic symptom, it wouldn't be unreasonable to talk to your doctor about getting some imaging.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call, Julie. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Bye. 1-800-348-2551,
1-800-348-2551, or voxpop at WAMC.org. We go now to Patrick in New Paltz. Hello, Patrick.
Hello, Dr. Leibowitz.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I'm okay. How you doing?
Doing great.
Do you know what the plan is for me?
I don't think this
if you
is...
Want to, if you want to explain
Are you trying to,
them...
get out of a copay, Patrick?
Well, no, I'm a patient. I'm a patient. He was actually in my brain not more than a month ago. So I'm just curious on, you know, you might want to explain what's up with me and, you know, what's going to happen.
I mean, I don't think we can do, it's like a HIPAA violation, even though you're asking for
no,
it, right?
No, I know.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I just heard your voice and I was like, I better call.
Well, we are definitely working on it. I'm still waiting. You know, we have some, with your plan, for example, we had some insurance questions that we were trying to sort out together.
Okay.
And I have not heard back on you know, the location where we're going to be able to take good care of you, but I have not forgotten about you, I promise.
Okay.
No, I know you haven't.
Thanks for calling, Patrick.
He's an excellent doctor.
Great. His office will be in touch.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon, Patrick. Thank you.
1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Mary Kay in Stone Ridge. Hello, Mary Kay.
Hi. I just have a quick question. Is cervical stenosis an orthopedic issue or a neurological issue?
So great question, right?
First, and, what's cervical stenosis?
Yeah, so cervical stenosis, so we have, there's different areas of the spine, cervical being the neck. Stenosis mean narrowing.
Right.
So in the cervical area, what's different than the lumbar area, we hear a lot about lumbar, your low back, is you have your spinal cord in your neck where you the spinal cord is not in the low back area. So you could have different symptoms in terms of pain, but also weakness. Cervical stenosis can cause trouble with your walking and balance, can cause trouble with your hands, coordination. So it's a kind of different situations. So in general, the spine is kind of split on orthopedic surgeons and neurosurgeons who both operate in and around the spine. And I think it's, you know, a political debate if you want to ask, you know, who you think is better. You know, it's a tough question to answer, right? I think you need to pick the right doctor that you have a good relationship with whenever you're going into a surgical relationship. What I tell my patients, you know, like Patrick was on the phone, is we're a team. Right. And we need to make sure that we're both on the same team. We both agree with what the plan is, because, you know, there's no zero risk option when we're talking about doing surgery. So we want everything to go great, but sometimes it doesn't go perfect. And we want to make sure that everyone's comfortable with the team members and the plan so that we have a good thought process going forward. So, you know, I think there's very good orthopedic surgeons and great neurosurgeons, and you need to pick who's right for you.
Okay, just one quick follow-up question. I'm sorry to be so. Anyway,
it's okay.
Is cervical stenosis, can that affect your balance and cause vertigo?
So wouldn't cause vertigo, but definitely can cause balance issues, mostly because you lose the ability to feel your feet potentially very well. It changes your ability to have a strong walking, and it would affect your balance in that nature. You know, things like vertigo are generally from the brain. So it would be difficult for cervical stenosis to cause a vertigo-like situation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep, you're welcome.
Thank you, Mary Kay. 800-348-2551 or voxpop at wamc.org. We have an email from Mike in Rexford who says, why do you prefer to use a radial artery approach over a femoral artery approach? Do you prefer?
I do prefer.
And why?
A few reasons. So number one, for the patient, it's more comfortable. When you go through the radial artery in the arm, when you're done with procedure, you close that artery with kind of like a little wristband with a little bubble on it, where if you go through the femoral artery, you can either have to hold pressure for up to 20 or 30 minutes of having someone hold pressure on the artery in your groin area, or there's different closure devices that you use. But all of those involve, after the procedure, laying flat for some period of time. Some could be hours. So when you go through the arm, you can sit up, you can walk around because you're wearing a little wristband. So better for the patient, more comfortable. Also safer. When you're going from the femoral artery, there's a lot of major arteries in the chest and stomach area that you have to go through, where you avoid all of that when you're coming from the arm. So less chance of major bleeding. It doesn't hurt as much. And really patient comfort, you can get up right away.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah. I'm a fan.
1-800-348-2551. Let's go now to Christopher in Saratoga Springs.
Good afternoon, Christopher.
Hi there.
How are you?
Can you hear me?
We can.
Go
ahead.
Yes, sir.
All right. Sorry. I was interested to know your thoughts on the latest advancement using machine learning for diagnosing stroke more quickly and accurately. And I just picked stroke as an example because I briefly heard you talking about that on the radio, but there's obviously various applications for ML in cerebral neurovascular disorders. And I was curious what you're working on.
You know, so there's a...
I didn't look at your profile beforehand. Sorry.
No problem. So there are two different commercially available. They're kind of widespread AI or machine learning programs where basically you'll have a CAT scan and that CAT scan gets uploaded to the cloud into their machine learning Cerner. And within mm-hmm. seconds, it will read the CAT scan to see if they think that there's a blockage, a blood large vessel occlusion or not. And I would say over the past 3 or 4 years, the algorithm keeps getting better. You know, it definitely is I would say overcaller, which is what you want. You want it to alert the human to look at more scans than less scans. So it still, overcalls things, which is better than obviously undercalling things. It's also being used now to detect brain hemorrhage, as well as used in terms of neurovascular, like aneurysm learning. It will be able to, tell you the size of the aneurysm accurately. Other things for stroke, there's kind of a grading scale from Canada called Aspects, which kind of looks at different parts of the brain and finds early stroke, which was used in some of the earlier stroke trials for thrombectomy or doing the stroke surgery. And the machine learning program can now calculate that score for you. And it does it all within, under a minute to 90 seconds or so, versus it might take a person, 5 minutes or something like that to read the whole scan. So it's definitely being used. The algorithms continue to get better, and the applications of what it knows continues to increase.
So I guess I'm asking, are you finding it helpful to use clinically, or is it something that's more done on the quote-unquote front lines? But obviously it's good for patient outcomes. And if you were interested in using ML, whether it's computer vision or otherwise, for furthering clinical care. I'm just interested in your thoughts.
So I do enjoy using it. So at Nuvance, we use a program called Rapid. That's kind of the first one that came out. The other one's called Viz, but we use Rapid. And yep. They have a great app. And it's very nice when you're on stroke call and you want to see, is what's going on in the ER. Is there anything that's cooking? Something you might be worried about. You can quickly look at the scans and see what's there. I also find it almost better than some of like the PACS programs, the way it reconstructs the pictures. I find it really, really helpful. So I do use it in my clinical practice. I do find it helpful. And I agree, it's faster than a person. So it does alert the people on the front line to get someone like me involved on a sooner basis.
Thank you for your call, Christopher. The phone number, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Leibovitz, our guest this afternoon, is Chief of Neurointerventional Surgery at Vassar Brothers Medical Center and a neurosurgeon at New Vance Health. We'll be back with our final segment after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Franciscan Heights Senior Community, located off Exit 7, I-90, Rensselaer, offering maintenance-free, professionally managed community for seniors. DePaulHousing.com for photos and information. Stinging Nettle Apothecary, Main Street, Catskill, New York, offering handcrafted, organic herb-based products, incorporating natural herbal remedies into daily life. StingingNettleNY.com. And the Glimmer Glass Festival, presenting the 2024 season, July 22nd through August 8th. Main stage productions include The Pirates of Penzance. Ticket information at glimmerglass.org.
Welcome back to Medical Monday on Vox Pop. I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Ray Graff this afternoon. Ray is scheduled to be back with y'all tomorrow at 2. Well, he'll do some newscasts in the morning first, but Ray's back tomorrow is what I'm saying. Our doctor this afternoon, Dr. John Leibovitz, Chief of Neurointerventional Surgery at Vassar Brothers Medical Center and a neurosurgeon at New Vance Health. The phone number, 800-348-2551. How you feeling?
Great.
Good.
Yeah,
back to the phones.
This is fun. Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. All right. Let us go to, checking the times, this one. Bob in Schenectady. Hello, Bob.
Hi. Yes, this is a great show. Thanks for putting it on. I got two questions. The first one is about 3-4 years ago, I went for a brain scan, and the results came back, and there was, among some other things, there was something about heavy metal deposits in the left hemisphere. What is that? They told me just don't worry about it. It's something that we see all the time. But that just sounds kind of weird to have something like that in your brain.
Yeah, Bob, I don't disagree with you. I think a lot of times the wording on an MRI report or CAT scan report is kind of confusing. And sometimes when the, quote, fancy words are broken down, something's are lost in translation. So I'm not entirely sure what, you know, heavy metal deposits mean. You know, I'm thinking that, you know, could be that there's evidence of kind of like some small bleeding that might have happened, like that wasn't actually important, but you had evidence of something like that happens routinely that's asymptomatic. You know, otherwise I would be worried that your doctor would want to do a workup for you of why you have heavy metals in the body and some other, you know, medical disorder going on. So I wish I had more info, Bob. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was the neurologist that told me that was there. And he's the one that told me to don't worry about it. So,
well, I imagine that they're right. But, you know, I'm not sure, obviously.
Yeah, okay. And the other thing is, you mentioned about headaches today. I've had ocular migraines for decades. And they come and they go, and they started coming back last year. I'm taking Nurtec whenever they come on. But I've also been having brief and sudden headaches in different parts of my skull for probably 8 or 10 months now. And I'm wondering what could be the cause of that?
You know, headaches are one of the most difficult things to treat. And a lot of times the location where you feel the pain has no relation to some sort of structural finding that an MRI or CAT scan may find. You know, someone like you that already has a headache history and you have a change in your headaches, that's not entirely abnormal. And I think the best thing would be to go back to your neurologist and make sure that there's not a optimization to your headache treatment that can be done. Some, you know, sometimes there's injections, Botox, there's all sorts of different headache treatments.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, the fact that you've already had imaging is good. You might need new imaging, obviously, because it's been a few years since your last picture. Anytime there's a change, but it might be best to head back to your neurologist.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Yep. You're welcome.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And we go now to Ivan in Albany. Hello, Ivan.
Ivan, yes.
Hi, good afternoon, Hello. Ivan. Welcome.
Hi, how are you, doctor? And first of all, I would like to thank you for your spending your time for free. I hope.
for sure.
the difficult task that you performed. 20 years ago, I was doing blacktop on my driveway, and some of the paste came into my face, and I took time to take it off. In the afternoon, I lost consciousness for 2 days, basically. I didn't know where I was. And then that brought me to a neurologist in Long Island. I'm from Long Island. I'm in an I-90 now on the road. Then they took me to North Shore with the Department of Neurology, neurosurgeon, and they did a CAT scan with contrast, but unfortunately they lost half of the liquid, and the nurses, they didn't realize. At the end of the day, the test came that I have a little bubble, like an inner tube with a little bump, and behind my eyes and my brain. And they told me, that was 20 years ago, and they told me that they had to check it because it might keep growing or stay the same. And then they mentioned to me at that time that it was very difficult to get to that area. I don't know if it today, with the new technology, it's possible to get access to that area. And the second question is, the new scan or MRI will detect it a better than what they did 20 years ago?
So those are good questions. I think what you described, it sounds like they found a small unruptured brain aneurysm based on a bubble in a tube kind of behind your eye. That's kind of what I'm assuming that they were saying.
Yeah.
And so I agree, 20 years ago, an aneurysm behind the eye of the ophthalmic artery, the eye artery, is a common place for brain aneurysms. And that is a very difficult place to get to surgically. It involves a lot of drilling down the skull base. But thankfully, that procedure now is treated with a stent. Most brain aneurysms at that location are treated with a stent. It could be done from the artery in the arm with a Band-Aid and takes, sometimes as quick as 30 minutes to do instead of a 6-hour kind of operation or some long period of time. Wow. So, yes, if we're talking about an ophthalmic segment aneurysm, yes, the treatment has changed. Your second question, is imaging better today than 20 years ago? Yes. Both CAT scan and MRI are much better today than they were before. We usually say that MRIs can see aneurysms as small as 2 millimeters, and CAT scans can see aneurysms even smaller than that.
Wow.
So we're talking about pretty tiny things here.
And it should be with contrast, doctor? It should be with contrast?
So it really depends. A CAT scan always uses contrast to look at the blood vessels. So a CAT scan angiogram is something with contrast. And an MR angiogram does not always need contrast. It kind of depends, again, on the local protocol where you go. But that is one of the benefits. A lot of places you can get an MR angiogram where you don't need contrast, and the MRI doesn't give you any radiation. So in my practice, that's my screening test, is an MR angiogram without contrast, because I feel, again, the risks are so low. No contrast, no radiation, just 10 minutes in the scanner.
Better. Doctor, thank you very much. And I will definitely go to the doctor to do another test, because that's 20 years has passed by.
Yeah.
Nothing happened to me now so far. And I'm taking a blood pressure medication.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't feel anything. Nothing changed. But I believe that you have to be preventive.
Sure. It's been 20 years. It's definitely worth seeing someone for an evaluation. And they have excellent doctors at North Shore.
Very well. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thank you for the radio, too, to do that.
Thank you, Ivan.
To the people. Thank you.
Of course. Bye-bye. Safe driving. 800-348-2551. Now to John in Woodstock. Hello, John.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
Good.
I'll try to make this quick. I had an MRI a couple years ago, and I was told I had a prominent facet joint hypertrophy and joint sparing and mild disc space narrowing. So, so I understand that's an age thing, too, but and I had physical therapy, which seemed to be helpful, but I do always have this occasional achiness at the base of my skull, occasional headaches, like they feel like bad eye strain, and I get an occasional queasy, dizzy-type feeling. It's not bad. I can still function normally. My question is this something that I just have to expect to live with, from here on in? Or will it get worse? What should I expect with this type of degenerative issue?
Sure. So, if we break down facet joint hypertrophy into, more normal speak, right, that what's really saying that you have arthritis of the spine. The facet joint is the fancy term for the joint in the spine, and hypertrophy is getting bigger. So they're describing, the radiologist is describing arthritis of the spine. So in general, does arthritis get worse over time? The answer is yes. Does it ever turn into something surgical? The answer would be maybe. If we're talking about neck, we're really good at surgery for neck pain that has arm pain with it, numbness, tingling, pain down the arm. That's a good surgical candidate. Achiness, pain that's just in your neck is generally not a good surgical candidate because most of neurosurgery or spine surgery is what you're trying to do is relieve pressure from the nerve and the nerve being the large nerves leaving the spine or the spine itself. So there's good conservative treatments like you talked about, physical therapy. There's some injections you can get at facet joint injections to help decrease the pain and of that. There's a radio frequency ablations, another procedure where they burn the nerve of the facet joint to decrease the pain. So there are definitely different treatments, but I would expect that your arthritis wouldn't go away, unfortunately. I wish I had a better answer for you.
Okay. Are those heavily invasive, or are they those procedures?
Those are like, the facet joint injections or radio frequency ablations are office-based procedures by a pain doctor.
And those long-lasting relief, or how does that work?
Everyone's different. Most injections we say are good potentially 6 weeks, 3 months, things like that. The radio frequency ablations, you can have up to a year relief if you're a good candidate. But definitely something to talk to the local pain physician about.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep,
thank
you're
you,
welcome.
1-800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. A question from the inbox. Alberta in Rhinebeck says, I'm wondering if Dr. Leibovitz has any thought about potential use of hyperbaric oxygen therapy in spinal or brain trauma, or if he knows of research in this area with or without surgical intervention.
I'm not familiar with hyperbaric oxygen treatment for, brain and spine trauma. In general, spine trauma is the treatment is different than brain trauma. In spine trauma, a lot of times if you have a spinal cord injury, the goal is again to relieve pressure from the spinal cord or the nerves by removing the bone fragments, stabilizing the spine, things like that. I've heard of stem cell research, but I haven't heard anything about hyperbaric oxygen. Same thing, brain trauma. Most brain trauma treatment is really conservative care, supportive care. If God forbid you have a large blood clot, the goal is to, again, remove that blood clot to give room back to the brain and then see what type of recovery someone has and support them through that. Most people that were getting surgery are relatively sick, so I'm not convinced that putting them in a hyperbaric chamber would be a great idea. But again, I'm not familiar with it. And if there's research, I would love to read it.
1-800-348-2551. Go back to the phones and to Ann in Durham. Hello, Ann.
Hello, and thank you so much for taking my call.
Certainly.
I suffer from post-polio syndrome. I was diagnosed at the post-polio clinic at NIH in Washington. My question is, at this point in the post-polio syndrome, how much of it is neurological and how much of it is just muscle loss?
Especially with people that have a long-standing neurologic incident like yourself, it's really a combination of the two. Polio was a virus, right, that attacked the nerves. And when the muscles lose the innervation or the electricity and the current from the nerve, the muscles go away. And so it's really a combined problem as opposed to something I think is one problem. You know, it started really as a nerve problem, but now it's a both problem.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. My cousin, Dr. Laurel Halsted, was the man who discovered post-polio syndrome.
That's really cool.
Yes, it is. But thanks very much.
You're welcome. Wish I had better news for you. I'm sorry.
I know. I live with it.
Thank you for listening and calling in, Ann. She's gone. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to... I'm going to go to Jeannie in Fishkill.
Hi, this is Jeannie. I've had 3 spinal surgeries since 2019. The first was a spinal decompression in L3-4. Mm-hmm. And then I had a fusion L3-4, and then I had a fusion L4-5. I continue to have numbness in my right leg from my knee to my ankle. And I've gone for the injections. I still do physical therapy. And I'm currently on Lyrica. I finally went to a doctor in New York City, and he did some tests, and he said that one of the screws in my last surgery did not fuse to the bone. Could that be what's causing my numbness, and is there anything that can be done to alleviate that besides just taking Lyrica and, you know, physical therapy?
Sure. So, you know, kind of a tricky situation. And, you know, part of what we have to remember is you had some type of nerve injury that led to the first surgery, the decompression, a disc herniation,
right,
or something like that. And
that's what I had, disc herniation.
Yep. And a lot of people have pain. That's kind of the most common symptom, but sometimes there's numbness, tingling, and even, God forbid, weakness. And the pain is really best treated by surgery, removing the pressure on the nerve. And weakness gets better as long as it's not longstanding. But sometimes numbness persists. And, fusion... the different fusions you had, you know, without knowing all of your history, it sounds like, you know, that from the first decompression, there was some maybe motion or abnormal motion that led to the fusion, and then a adjacent segment disease. So after you fuse the spine or those facet joints, like we spoke about yesterday, we're putting more pressure on the joints above and below, which sometimes leads to those joints breaking down, requiring another operation. The common symptom of a screw being loose is generally back pain. And if the bones fuse and the screw is loose, that's not something that we always care about. If the screws are loose and the bones don't fuse, sometimes you would need another fusion or a bigger operation to kind of span those segments even more to make this construct stronger. But in general, loose screw, the most common symptom would be, you know, pain in the back from the lack of the bones fusing.
I do have that.
Yeah. And, you know, if the screw is out of place, it can cause pain against the nerve. But, you know, kind of continued numbness is, I would say, probably related to the initial insult that you had years ago. But, you know, without having more information, hard to say for sure.
Okay.
Thank you for calling, Jeannie.
Thank you.
We are out of time, but I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to those we left on the line. I'd also like to thank Dr. John Liebovins of New Vance Health and Vassar Brothers for joining us today. Great job.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. Support for Vox Pop, Medical Monday on Vox Pop specifically, comes from Dr. Lucy Chapik, plastic surgery and med spa, offering facials, facelifts, and more, working towards beautification and wellness. Dr. Lucy Chapik, NY on Instagram. Thanks again for joining us on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Bob Rathbun took your calls. I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Ray will be back to talk antiques with Mark Lawson. That is tomorrow afternoon at 2 p.m. The locked box is open. Please feel free to donate to WAMC at WAMC.org or by calling 800-323-9262. Stay tuned now for the best of our knowledge.